a 60,000-watt video transmitter. I guarantee a number of the circuits that you think should work would go bonkers. So you got to be a little bit careful. Thank you, Eric, for any comments on that. KQLAW on the TechNet.
Yeah, Roger, Dick. I mean, even when I work on stuff in the station, you got to be careful because, you know, most of the broadcast stuff is designed to be in the place where the transmitter is. They put a lot of effort into filming the broadcast. But, you know, when you buy a camera that's going to cost you $100,000, and gee, for $100,000, you better not put it, you know, make pictures that have RF in it. But yeah, I've kicked myself in the rear many times because RF is leaking and it makes stuff do very strange things. But I'm pretty careful about that for the most part. This is really not the case with this, but the clue you gave me before makes perfect sense. Not that it doesn't work, but, you know, when you're actually doing a real-world connecting that thing to an antenna, and by the way, where I had it connected to the antenna is like 30 miles from here, so it wasn't in the shadow of major RF, but that's close enough to the airport to make you nuts, because, you know, most of it, like where I live, the main frequency is down at 118, 119, and there's lots of it. But that's why I put the helical resonator in there and tuned it so that the bottom of it is around 130. So I get pretty good attenuation into the aircraft frequencies anyway. But tomorrow, I'll get my other spectrum analyzer and see if the thing is singing. That's probably the answer.
Possibly so. But when you come back next week, let us know. Sounds like an exciting story. Frank, you wanted some extra time. I hope Frank's still with us. K2, Mike Lima, Bravo. You had an amplifier question. Why don't you go right now, Frank, if you're still there.
Yeah, thank you. I wonder if Joe is still here. I didn't pick it up in time when he was asking about an HF rig. And Mel, I think, gave him a very fine answer. I'm not pushing brands or anything, but the Pro 3 is certainly an excellent transceiver in that category. Kenwood does not make a radio that's quite comparable price-wise. The Yaesu, if he wants to explore it, you know, the Mark V and the old MP have fine reputations, but to just pick up a point that you mentioned, Dick, the FT-2000, which is the Yaesu radio that's in the price range and competitive with the Pro 3, has got a callback. They've had some serious problems. I know one that's on its fourth one. Basically, they're having power supply failures because that radio was designed to work if you want in Class A, and for some reason, it's not sensing at low power, so when the guys want to go to the higher power, it thinks it's in Class A, and the power supply blows on it. Anyway, I just thought I'd make that comment if he's still there and considering other radios.
Yes, this is Joe. I'm still here, thank you. This is Joe, KT2QYW.
And that's Joe from Harrison. Okay. Frank, I know you had an amplifier question. Why don't you fire away right now?
Oh, okay, thank you. K2RIW and the Net K2MLB. Some of us were on 80 meters and a discussion came out. A guy was talking about, you know, just tuning up and loading properly. And in terms of wanting, you know, mentioning that as he was tuning the amplifier, this was a, you know, a grounded grid with a Pi network, pretty common that is on the band. In any event, he's talking about it not being requiring heavier loading. You know, he's going through the process of tuning up and increasing the drive and re-dipping and so forth and so on. Anyway, the comment was, or the question was asked, as he wanted to increase the loading, it just so happens on that particular amplifier, he would turn the loading control clockwise, and the number would get bigger. So his comment was that in order to increase the coupling and have heavier loading, he was increasing the capacitance. And a couple of the guys agreed, My thought was that, my recollection was that on that particular, it was an Ameritron that, you know, is kind of popular, that even though as you turn the loading control clockwise and the numbers get larger, that you're actually reducing capacitance to increase the coupling, and everybody said, no, 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 if you want to load an amplifier heavier, you've got to add capacitance. So my question is, are you adding or reducing capacitance when you want to get heavier loading?
You're going to like this one, Frank. The answer is yes. Depends on the kind of a network. If you take a look at the K2RIW, Parallel Kilowatt Amplifier, way back in the dark ages of 1972, April and February and March issue, I guess it was, that was a strip line resonator where the output loading network was a simple series capacitor off the grid halfway, off the plate line, which was a half-wave resonator. In that particular circumstance, when you increased the capacitance that went to the output connector, without a doubt, you increased the loading. But now if I take an HF rig with a PI network, I'm relatively sure you're right. You got the C1, which you got a C1 capacitor inductor and C2 of the PI network, output tank circuit of the amplifier. Most of us call the C1, the first capacitor, the resonating capacitor, and the C2 we call it the loading capacitor. When you decrease C2, which is a shunt capacitor to ground, my parallel kilowatt amplifier had a series capacitor between the resonator and the semiconductor, therefore capacitance for loading. In the case of a PI network, the C2 capacitor goes to ground. As you decrease C2, you could say you're bypassing less of the energy to ground, coupling it more to the output connector, and you get heavier loading. That's one way of looking at it. If you redraw the circuit, the C1 capacitor is going to ground, the C2 capacitor is going to ground, the center tap of the two capacitors really is ground. Forget about the fact that it's ground for a second. Look at it from center tap. As C2 decreases, the voltage across that half of the series network of two capacitors is going to get larger. That is heavier loading. So there's two ways of looking at it. Redraw the circuit so you can see those two capacitors as being a series network where the tube is across one of them and the output loading coax connector is across the other. And we're just talking about what ratio voltage goes across those two capacitors when the combination is kept bringing back into resonance with the inductor that's across the two. So I'm with you. Less C on C2, which is less shunting to ground, which is higher reactance on the series combination. All of those are ways of looking at heavier loading if it's a PI network. Now, if it's an L network, depending on which comes first, the L or the C, there could be other answers. But I think many HF rigs, if they're tube rigs, are using a PI network. Since most transistor rigs do not use a PI network, and so most of us don't even have tuning controls, but if they did, because the output loading network is so darn different, again, there could be two different answers depending on that particular configuration. K2, Mike Lima, Bravo, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, K2RIW in the TechNet, K2MLB. Oh, that's fine, Dick. That's great. That's very helpful because, yeah, this was, you know, a traditional grounded grid amplifier with a PI network where when I say typically, you know, the plate tuning control is the tuning the amp output circuit and the loading control that we call that is, you know, adjusting the coupling of the amp to the antenna or the load. So thank you very much for your help.
Okay. I wonder if we have Paul, WS2N. I wonder if you're available tonight, Paul, our space expert, K2RIW, the TechNet. Looks like Paul's not available tonight. Did I skip anyone who had a question, comments, or whatever? Come and speak right now. Give us your call letters and name, K2RIW. Hey, kind of quiet. Mel, time for you to tell us what those merry group of guys in the Kings County Radio Club are doing, and what, in particular, that guy who lives on Dover Street, what's he doing? So, what's you in your neighborhood, Mel? K2KEY, KTRIW, the TechNet.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Mel, well, let's see, of interest. Last Monday, we had a meeting of the Kings County Radio Club at Floyd Bennett, which we have every second Monday of the month at about 7:30. All is welcome to come down, and nothing else, just say hello to everybody and have a cup of coffee and a donut. And we usually have a fairly lively, discussion about all kinds of things, and a demonstration of something electronic. Well, one of the discussions, I should say one of the comments we had, was from one of our members, W2/8R1B. He's Julian. He's originally from down the island, and he was up here now, and he was the other day, Monday afternoon, he was telling us that he was someplace working, and he went out for some reason to maybe get a part from his truck or something for that, and the little boy was standing there and asked him, "Can you help me, mister? There's a lot of smoke in my house." And when he turned, he saw this house right there. Smoke was pouring out of it. And he ran upstairs, up the flight of the stoop, and there was another little kid inside, another child inside the house, so he quickly got him out, too. And the little boy said, "My grandmother's inside there." Well, he said, well, he couldn't go back in, and smoke was overpowering. And the only thing he had with him was available right away was his handy talkie. So, Howie, HWW, congratulations. Your repeater helped save a life because he used your repeater to summon help. I wonder how he's still on frequency and he's familiar with the situation. Over.
Yes, I am. I was there. We handled the traffic. At first, we thought it was someone falling around, but as soon as we heard the screaming, we had four base stations. We handled the traffic, and obviously, New York City Fire Department, 911 handled it perfectly. It was a great day for amateur radio. Over to you, Dick.
Well done. Well done. And this gets back to a subject that's near and dear to me. Just to give you two sentences, four sentences on it. I'm fighting a battle with the well-meaning people in Bayville, Long Island, as well as Hicksville and Farmingdale. They're all trying to remove radio antennas from their town because they think they represent a radio frequency biohazard. As such, cell phone coverage decreases, fire and police coverage decreases, and so people are going to die because of a decrease in communication capability. And the Department of Homeland Security is offering tens of millions of dollars to these communities to establish better communications for the reasons of emergency and homeland security-like functions. But day to day, every day, your fire, your police, law enforcement, your first responders, they need good radio equipment. Without it, people will die. Simple as that. And radio signals, when they hit a human being, do nothing but create an extremely minor amount of heating. That's all RF does. Your microwave oven doesn't do anything to your food but heat it. It doesn't make any molecular changes to the cells of your food. And just to give you an example of something that amazed the hell out of me, I was at a very important meeting. I'll tell you the name of the group. The IEEE, which stands for Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers, Long Island Consultants Network, last Wednesday night. A very smart engineer who, for some reason, was misinformed about RF, asked me the question, when I take my food out of the microwave oven, how long should I wait for the radiation to die down before it's safe to eat the food? Wow. That's a question. Wow. That's equivalent to saying, if I take a bird 500-watt dummy load and I put 20-meter energy into it and I turn off the transmitter, how long does it take for the signal in the 500-watt dummy load to die down. Well, what's your definition of signal? The radio signal? It's gone in half a cycle, nanosecond. If you're talking about the heat you put into the dummy load, yeah, it's going to take a while for the heat to dissipate. RF energy, when it hits a dummy load, or when RF energy hits a human being, it creates heating. That's it. The person has somehow thought that you're charging the food with radio energy, and it takes some number of seconds or minutes for the radio energy to die down in the food, and you should let the food sit there on the plate, on the table, until the radio energy dies down before you start eating the food. The person really believes that. It makes a little bit of common sense. You can sort of see how a person could get that opinion, but it's an extremely strong misunderstanding of the physics involved. You put radio energy into any kind of resistive material, and that's what living material is to a radio signal. It's just simply resistive material. You turn off the radio signal, and that radio signal is gone in the resistive material at the instant you turn it off. There is no flywheel action. There is no stored energy. An inductor in a capacitor, a resonant network, yes, that can store energy for some number of microseconds. But a pure resistor, can you store radio energy in a resistor? Absolutely not. Mr. Maxwell, who wrote the equations on that, must be rolling over in his grave. I thought you'd get a kick out of that one, Mel. K2KEY, K2IW, the Tech Man.
Dick, can I make a couple more comments?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to let you know that we did, that was a very serious thing. We were all just hanging out, having a queue, so a guy comes in and says he needs help, and we went to work. But you don't realize what we have to go through with all kinds of regular, you know, the city and everybody. Everybody trying to take antennas off everywhere. And you know what? The liability insurance is off the wall.
Yeah, it is. We can remove the antennas from all the water towers that are near all the schools. We can remove all the antennas that are in the church steeples and on the temples. There are a few temples that have antennas built into the steeples. There are a few churches that have antennas built into the steeples. There's a zillion radio towers that have got antennas on them. There are a zillion other buildings with antennas, and some of those buildings are close to a church, close to a school, close to a supermarket, whatever. Safe is all hell. If you really believe that radio energy is unsafe, you should realize that it does nothing but heating. The 100-watt light bulb that you turn on in the room creates 1,000 times more heating than that radio signal. There are people who are afraid to turn on their cell phone when the children are in the house or in the room. I know a man who happens to be a relative of mine who is afraid to use his laptop computer with the PCMCIA card when the children in the house, because he doesn't want to expose them to the RF energy of the packets that come out of there for a fraction of a second. And the amount of heating is at least 1,000 times weaker than the light bulb that's in the room. Does he make sure the kids are not in the room when the light bulb is turned on? Does he make sure the kids are never exposed to sunlight? This creates heating that 1,000 times greater than any of the radio heating you can get with any reasonable activity you've got in modern day. So it's a strong misunderstanding. People will die if we keep doing this nonsense of saying, not in my backyard. There is a community that shall remain nameless on Long Island that says, I want all of those antennas that have been there for 13 years removed from this community. I want you to put them into the adjacent town. There's two things wrong with that. First of all, they're dead wrong and people are going to die. Second of all, they seem to not give a damn about the health and welfare of the people in the adjacent town. If they really believe it's harmful and they want the harm to take place to the people in the adjacent town, the ethics of that is terrible. The science understanding of it in the first step is also even more than terrible. We, the people in the sound of my voice right now, are the best people who understand wireless and radio. Unless you do something really dumb, like putting a kilowatt into a corner reflector antenna and put it 2 feet away from your head and aim your eyesight straight into it and look at it for 6 solid minutes. unless you do something like that, just about everything you do with radio and your microwave oven and your laptop computer and your cell phone is safe as all hell. To develop xenophobia about radio simply because the word RF radiation is used. Craziness. It's not RF radiation. It's RF signal. It's RF transmission. It's radio transmission. We've got to stop using the word radiation because it scares people into thinking it means cancer. Well, you eliminate all the radio antennas in your town and you're going to be killing people. Simple as that. And it's a useless death. Criminally negligent homicide. And I'm not kidding. It's just a matter of time before somebody dies because of a lack of good radio communication and the rest of the surviving family sues the town because they died needlessly. And I think there's a good chance if they got a good lawyer, they'd win the case. And they deserve to win it. And I suddenly understand why the problem exists. Nowadays, we've all learned that when you want to learn something about something you don't know, you go to Google or some other search engine, you go onto the Internet. The Internet is filled up with really yucky information about radio frequency biohazards. The only good information must be written in a journal that is peer-reviewed, because that particular subject is so emotional that without peer review, you can easily have something that sounds great, but it's pure garbage. That's the good news. Look only for the peer-reviewed journals, like the Microwave Theory and Technique, which is the special technical group of the IEEE. Microwave Theory and Technique, monthly journal proceedings, that's got data in there traceable to the Bureau of Standards, traceable to Bedrock. Same thing with the special technical group on antennas and propagation. So there's where you can get the good articles. You have to go to a library to read them. You cannot read them online. You go to any one of those articles that you know about, and you try to read it online. The IEEE says you have to join this extra organization where you give them an extra pot of money, which allows you to download those articles. So the good articles online are not available. Only the bad articles are available. We got a runaway condition here, a vicious cycle of bad information. That guy Lou wrote an article in 1999, and lots of people are quoting it because it sounds authoritative. It is not. It was used in a federal court where somebody accused Motorola of creating a brain tumor from their cell phone, and the Lou article was created. And the federal court threw out the Lou article because it was the wrong power, the wrong frequency, not peer-reviewed, and it was hearsay data that was not backed up with any good measurements. It's just good-sounding data if you're an alarmist person. And because he is a doctor, it sounds authoritative. It's terrible stuff. So the bottom line is you do a search on the Internet for radio frequency biohazard information, all the information you can find, per se, high percentage of it is bad information. The really good information is not available to you. What a terrible situation. I can see how we got here from there, and I can see that this problem ain't going to go away for a long time. And until the problem is solved, people are going to be dying in those towns. That's a strongly felt opinion of mine. Sorry, I'm so hot under the collar of this one. Mel, K2KUY, do you have any sense to all this? K2RIW.
W2VL, repeater, system.
Yeah, this is K2KUY. Yeah, it is a tough nut to crack, as they say. There's been so many caught on cases. In fact, one of the hams was telling me about a case recently where amateur radio was involved, where a neighbor sued the ham that his antenna equipment and his ham equipment had caused, I believe, the neighbor's wife to get cancer. I mean, he actually got himself a lawyer and pursued this. And, of course, it really didn't go very far, essentially, because I assumed that with the ARRL, with their experts and a number of other people that testified that this is not really possible, that, you know, but let me put it to you this way. You get involved in a lot of litigation and it's going to cost you a lot of money. This is the bottom line. So no matter where it is, whether it's in a town, the town situation and all, you know there's a lot of lawyers involved and it's all very costly to prepare these briefs and everything by the hour. It adds up to big figures quite fast. So you're not going to, like I say, Dick, you can, as they literally say, stand on your head. You're not going to convince certain people. It's still, they'll quote, like you say, they'll quote. How about they'll quote now with this business with and this became the new quote now, that England has now, if there was nothing wrong with cell phone technology, why is England, say, anyone under 9 years old, cannot, if they're in public, they are, and they're caught using a cell phone, parents are liable for a summons. I mean, there you are. I mean, it's taken out, I can say, it's taken out of context. I'm sure, like you say, I wouldn't sit with my kilowatt rig in my shack, you know, on 80 meters. I use that receiving loop and all. I wouldn't attempt to, you know, rework that receiving loop, put maybe a very good high voltage capacitor on it so that I could load power into it and say, gee, let me see if this receiving loop sitting right next to me, 12 foot in diameter, would and run a kilowatt plus into it. I mean, that would be full on. But this is what you're going to run. You're running up against, Dick, and don't see how you're really going to get anybody to be change their mind, just like here happened here when they wanted to put the Doppler radar system in here at Floyd Bennett. Now Floyd Bennett is isolated. You know how isolated it's out there. You want to hear the stink from people in Canarsie, which is a good, as the crow flies, as they say, more than a mile away, Dick, that, no, you're not sticking that Doppler thing in Floyd Bennett. So you see, eventually it did go in the corner there, but, oh, my God, if this thing was held up for years, and how many lives do you think were put in jeopardy without that the Doppler radar effect over?
I believe it. The Doppler radar is one of the nicest high-tech pieces of hardware that gives you a three-dimensional picture of what weather is doing. With that Doppler radar nearby, you get a very high-resolution picture of wind shear and microburst and all these other kind of things that can affect flights going into and out of Kennedy Airport, LaGuardia, and so on. I think it was, what, about 20 years ago, there was a downburst of a plane trying to land at Kennedy Airport and land in the community nearby and created a tremendous amount of damage. Had there been a Doppler radar, an X-RAD radar operating at that time, you would have recognized that very characteristic signature and you would have diverted flight. You would have done one of two things. You would have given the pilots warning, most likely to be diverting flights for the 10 minutes, 20 minutes it takes for that dawn weather stream to pass over Kennedy Airport, or you give the pilot sufficient warning so that he lands hot. Even though you've got a downburst situation going on, if the pilot lands about 20 miles an hour faster, even though it's a little bit rougher landing, and he's going to roll out a little bit further on the runway, if he's got enough speed when he comes down to land, he can make a safe landing, even there is this downburst of weather taking place, as long as it's not a tornado right on the runway. He can land if he's given sufficient forewarning, and that radar gives you the forewarning. Now, when it comes to cell phones being used by juveniles in England, the last I heard that was documented is that it is a recommendation. In other words, because they're accepting the fact that a very young child is reproducing an awful lot of cells very, very rapidly, everyone believes there could be an increased risk of being near a very strong sense of RF energy. As such, they're making a recommendation that, as I remember, a five-year-old child not talk to grandma for a significant length of time on a cell phone. It's not a law. And the last I heard, you don't get a summons for doing that. It is a recommendation just to be on the conservative side. That if the child really wants to talk to grandma, have them do it on a wired telephone is the recommendation. Well, that represents a little bit of a problem because much of Europe has become so enthralled with cell phones that much of Europe has abandoned their wired telephone system. And so The only way that the child can talk to grandmother is wait till Easter when they're together, or to use a cell phone. And there's an easy way you can have a child use a cell phone, and that's with a remote boom mic, as long as the antenna is away from the child. See, the problem with the cell phone is it puts the antenna a half inch away from your head. With a remote speaker mic system on the cell phone, you can easily make the cell phone 2 feet away from your head. And if you compare 2 feet to half an inch, we're talking about a couple of 100-to-1 difference in range, which is a few 10,000-to-1 difference of the amount of RF energy getting into the child because of the so-called inverse square law. So just put a boom mic on the child and let him talk as long as he wants to grandmother on the cell phone. To not operate the cell phone because a child is in the room, or to not operate your laptop computer because the child is in the room, is a thorough misunderstanding of any reasonable laws of physics. That's an opinion. Anybody else want to add or subtract? Give me your call, letters, and name right now. KGRIW,
KunstTechNet. Dick, it's a law. It's not a recommendation anymore. It's actual law in England.
All right. I'll take your word for it that some enthusiastic member of parliament made it into a law. But I presume the law gives you a workaround by way of a remote boom mic and earphone to the child. What do you think, Howie?
I do not know, but I just want to say, Mel, I appreciate that. That was kind of, we were very gratified that we found out about that. We did. It's in the news. We did save that lady. That lady was saved by repeater, by hams. And you know, Dick, just to make another comment, there is so much stuff going on. Even the insurance companies now, they don't want to insure sites anymore. It's getting ridiculous.
Yeah, the sad state of affairs is that we need more cell sites. There's a whole lot of dead spots all over Long Island. I mean, if this is the best of all worlds, it would be nice to start with your automobile in Montauk Point and drive to downtown Manhattan while talking to your cousin in Iowa. It would be nice to be able to do that. You absolutely cannot. I don't care what service you've got. I don't care if it's Verizon, Sprint, Nextel, T-Mobile, whoever. You start at Montauk Point, and you drive to Manhattan continuously and try to talk, I think you're going to be dropped 5 times at least. And there's going to be dead spots in there where you've got nothing because there's not enough cell sites. We need more cell sites. The current rough rule of thumb, if you're going to put a cell site into a town, is you're going to install something like $500,000 worth of hardware, and before you begin the project, you have to set aside $250,000 for legal fees. You're going to fight with the town, even though it's the exact same cell site, exact same design, that you've installed 35 of them in the last year, and you're doing the exact same thing, and now you're going into a brand new town, and to go through all the rigmarole of all the legal jazz in order to get a permit for construction, you have to set aside $250,000. It's easy to say, well, it's somebody else's money. It's Nextel's money. Uh-uh. Guess who really pays? Left-handed or right-handed, you're going to pay. By the same token, you may have people who are cheating on automobile insurance, so to speak, and they're claiming injuries they don't really have. And you're saying, well, the insurance company is rich, they can afford it. And you can try to justify it. Guess who really pays? Your premiums go up accordingly. We all pay. There is no free ride. There is no free lunch. You're going to pay. There is, by the Communication Act of 1996, there is a federal law saying you cannot deny the siting of a cell phone base station based on a perceived risk of radio frequency biohazard. Your federal government has said, not that there is little risk, they have said point blank, there is no documented risk. So therefore, you can no longer deny a cell site base station based on a perceived risk of radio frequency biohazard. You can still deny the sighting, you can still deny the application because you think it's unsightly, it's going to change property values, you're afraid it's going to fall, it's not strong enough, it's put on the wrong building, it doesn't fit the aesthetics of the town. Yeah, you still have those reasons, but you can no longer use radio frequency biohazard. After 50 years of study, the federal government said this is a non-issue. So, $250,000 has to be set aside for legal fees. My goodness, is that a waste? And we keep doing it over and over and over again. I hope that's going to change sometime in the future. I hope I live long enough for people to come to their sanity on this one. KQRIW. Anybody want to make any comments?
KB2YEW in the group?
KB2YEW. Start off with your name, sir. And then go right ahead.
Yeah, name here is Guy. Just recently on Thursday, there was something very similar on the news. On 88 Winds, they were saying that 3 people died in the last couple of months due to lack of cell phone sites just north and south of Albany on New York State Thruway.
Beautiful. Guy, what newspaper, what time, what news report? Give me a little bit more information on that. Sounds like darn good information. I'd like to know more about it. You got it, Guy.
Yeah, this was on AM News 88.
Okay, it appeared on News 88 roughly what day?
Believe it was on Thursday. Believe I heard it on Thursday. I don't recall what time it was, but let's see, wait a minute. Thursday I was going home when I heard it. It had to be about 3:34 o'clock. 3:34 p.m. on Thursday.
Very good information. Thank you for bringing our attention, Guy. I have said over and over again, you can deny cell phone base station sightings. You can deny allowing the police to put up enough antennas, the fire to put up enough antennas, your ambulance services to put up enough antennas. You can do that if you want. People will die because of those decisions. And that's silly. It's time we join the 21st century. I mean, there are a certain number of people who have the attitude, why can't life be simple? Why can't it be like the good old days? Well, the good old days, we're using nostalgia when you say that statement. You're remembering the pleasant and not remembering the unpleasant. There's a hell of a lot of terrible things we live through in the good old days. If you really want to live such a simple life, the good old days, you have the freedom of choice in the United States to go and live with the Mennonites and the Amish in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. They will accept you, and you'll have a nice, simple life. None of these modern contrivances. And if you really want to live that way and you really believe it, please go do that. But don't force that opinion on the fellow citizens of your town. You're putting them at unnecessary risk. There's a ridiculous number of dead spots in Nassau and Suffolk County where police radio communication systems does not work. In theory, a patrolman has to memorize all the spots that are dead spots in those communities because, in theory, he cannot do law enforcement operations in those dead spots. If he's out of radio communication, he doesn't have the backup system to protect his life and maybe yours. That's silly. We are tolerating the fact that there are dead spots in the emergency communication system. Just to give you an example of how that can really mushroom, during Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, a significant number of the police force of New Orleans abandoned their post, abandoned the town, because the radio system no longer worked, and they were not willing to put their life at that much risk. That's what can happen. The first line of defense that patrolman has is that handy-talkie or that radio in his patrol car. It gives him the ability to talk back to headquarters and ask for help if he needs it. It gives him the ability to say, officer being fired upon. Large personal injury. Send the ambulance, in other words. There's all kinds of real vital communication is required if the communication system works. And so Homeland Security realizes this terrible dead spot in a lot of communities, and they're offering the money. Federal money is being offered, and many communities are saying, no, take your money and throw it away. You're not going to put those antennas in my town. You can see the grief that's going to cause. I hope this doesn't continue. I'm not so optimistic. KQRIW in the SecNet.
Dick and Julio have something on another subject.
Go ahead, Rich.
With a comment on that.
Who is that with a comment on that? Say that again. You call it his name?
Yeah, Howard, N2GOT here, portable in Howard Beach. Just have a comment, Dick. The government to go in and use a thing called eminent domain, they've done it with other areas. If it's for the greater good, if we can convince the government, if it's the greater good, to save lives, they could use something called eminent domain.
Yeah, I've got the newspaper article in front of me where they are on the threshold of doing that right now. The county government is on the threshold of taking those water towers in the communities where the community is saying, not in my backyard. They're on the threshold of declaring them, what's the word for it now? Not defunct. There's a way that they can take them over.
Condemnation.
What was that again?
Condemnation, to condemn something. This is KQ2MJ.
Thank you. You got it. They intend to condemn those water towers so that they, by eminent domain, can now force the antennas to be installed. And so, therefore, a person with these terrible opinions about radio has two choices. Either become educated and accept it, or move out of the community and maybe go to Lancaster, Pennsylvania. But if you educate yourself and accept it, you are entering the 21st century. And it's about time some of the people do. The xenophobia they have on this is irrational. It's paranoid. It's crazy. It should stop. Rich and Tuio, go right ahead.
Okay, the K2RIW and Tech 10 Limewalk in Tuio. I'm in the bedroom with the HC. How am I coming in, Dick?
Rather good. Please proceed.
Okay, Dick. I'm on an external antenna. On another subject, if you can get back to this one if you wish, what I wanted to bring up, I have a guy coming in tomorrow to install a brand new ham table for the ham equipment. Three shelves, all custom made. The reason I'm bringing it up, he's kind of a rare bird. He's going to move the ham equipment because, you know, I had the stroke and I have some other problems and I can't move the equipment myself. Now, this is a guy who had done work for me in the past over the last couple of months. He did about $4,000 worth of work in the house and doing plastering, painting, sheetrocking. And the guy is somewhat familiar with radio. He was into CB back in the 70s and 80s. I don't know too many people who would, you know, take the responsibility of moving the ham equipment. I'm going to have to disconnect the cable. He's going to move it, including a 100-pound Ameritron AL1500 amplifier, which has an 8877 in it, quite an expensive tube. He's going to install the ham table, put everything back, and he said, I'll have to hook it up because he's not familiar with the wiring. Would you like me to give his name? Or, because if anybody has any work, he's very good in situations where people can't move furniture, can't move ham equipment, or anything heavy. He's a local guy. I got him to Whitestone Lumber. Like I say, he did about $4,000 worth of work here in the last couple of months. I thought it might be helpful if anybody could use him. Get it?
Yeah, I'm convinced, Rich, that you're not making any financial profit on releasing that man's name. And it's a rare skill of a person that can do that kind of work. And there are people who have certain disabilities within the sound of our voices, and they might want that kind of work being done. So I don't think there's any violation of the remuneration laws of the FCC. Please go ahead and tell us the man's name.
Okay, I don't think I have his phone number handy here. Do I or not? No, as a matter of fact, I do. His name is Kenny Sullivan, like in Ed Sullivan. He calls himself K. Sullivan and Son. He's in Whitestone. He has a cell number that's best to get him on. It's 917-301-2738. 917-301-2738. His name is Kenny Sullivan. Calls himself K. Sullivan and Son. Says home repair and carpentry. No job too small. Quality work. He does do quality work. And like I say, he's very patient with people that can't move the stuff, and he'll do it for you.
That's good to know, Rich. That's a relatively rare skill. And, boy, I need something like that. If you guys could look around my room right now, you would say, hey, this man needs some more tables and some more shelves, because things are a little bit overloaded. People who visit me would say, my goodness. My best explanation is that my house is not a house where I brag about its beauty. It is a tool. My house is a tool that keeps the weather off my radio equipment, and it keeps the weather off my wife's book collection. A little bit of an exaggeration, but there's some of the truth in that. There's many people who take a lot of pride in their house and make it a thing of beauty. I'm listening to a slightly more distant drummer, as you can tell. Okay, good information. Anyone else would have anything else we should add? Mel may have, but anyone else who think we should add anything before we close down tonight? Let's see, we've been at it for 2¾ hours, keeping people awake to the wee hours of the morning. KTRIW, you're listening. Give me your call letter's name right now if there's anything else you think we should add.
WD2HWW.
A little bit noisy, but go ahead, Howie.
Copy what I said, Dick?
I just heard. Did you copy what I said? We all heard nothing before that. Go ahead, Howie.
All right, this should be better. Is this a better signal?
Fantastic. Please proceed.
I'm going to do it before my batteries die. They're trying to pass laws here in New York and throughout the country about driving and using technology, and also walking across the street and using your phone, your radio, or your iPod. I don't know if you know about that stuff, Dick.
It makes sense. We have all seen people dialing a cell phone while driving on a three-lane superhighway. We have all seen people with iPods blaring away in their ears as they're walking across the busy street. Somebody could honking a horn at them, they would never hear it. I first became aware of this problem when I was entering Edwards Air Force Base in California, near Lancaster, California, 10-15 years ago, and I had an earphone on one side of my head, but my other ear was completely exposed, and I was listening to a handy talkie on 2 meters talking to the local repeater as I went by the guard shack, and they essentially arrested me but didn't give me a ticket. They told me that no, in California you cannot do that. That was, let me think now, that was 1989, and California had a rule saying that you cannot have your hearing impaired while you drive an automobile in that state. 1989. I don't know how long the law had been in effect at that time. Here we are 18 years later, and New York State is finally catching up with this one. I think it's about time. Thank you for any comments on that, Howie.
I think it's kind of ridiculous. Also, Dick, another thing. I one day was getting, I was standing outside at a bus stop talking on my HT, and I had a lady start screaming at me. He said, "You turn that radio off, you're hurting my baby, I'm going to call the police." You got so many people out there have no idea what it's all about.
Yeah, this is more of the xenophobia we're talking about earlier. If they search hard enough, they will find sensationalistic information in newspapers, magazines, certainly on the Internet. The good news is the Internet gives us a lot of information. The bad news is you've got to filter that information. A certain percentage of it is bad information, even though it sounds good and has the ring of authority. And Dr. So-and-so says so. That doesn't make it right. Without it being peer-reviewed material, because we're talking about a high-tech area here that is highly misunderstood. The majority of people who express an opinion about radio danger are usually speaking more out of emotion than out of reality. It's really time for a change. Okay, Mel, do you have anything else that we should talk about tonight? And what's your next goal for the week? You're going to double the effective capture area of one of your antennas? K2KEY, K2YW, the Tech Man.
Yeah, this is K2KEY. I'd like to say, you know, anything you need. You need a wall stretcher there in the shack, and I need a time stretcher. I know I went through that whole situation with the ham shack, and finally, 2 years ago, went through a major overhaul of the ham shack, and put up shelves, built consoles and everything, and what a difference. It's nice, neat. My XYL is very happy with it. It was the one time a pure disaster for a while. As far as last week, we had a discussion, and in the discussion, we were talking about, you know, loops, and the mention was a company called AEA, and they were, you know, manufacturing a loop antenna, a remote control loop antenna, and it fell on hard times, and one of the engineers with AEA, I happen to know, I had asked him about it, and he said that it just never took off, never had any popularity. And no matter how much they more or less advertised and what you could do with it, for situations where people had, you know, places where really squeezing antenna situations, and that this was ideal. In many cases, this would be, you know, what would fit the bill. And yet, they couldn't believe that, you know, a loop antenna of that size could, you know, really, you say a thing this size, you know, say 6 foot in diameter, whatever theirs was, you know, it's going to work on 40 meters. Nah, no way. No way possible. So they more or less sort of threw it aside that was not, you know, a great antenna for people, even in, you know, extreme cases. Another misnomer was that it had a very narrow bandwidth. Now, on the receiving loop that I have put together, I can touch up the tuning, of course, and I found that I could actually make it resonate anywhere across the 8-meter band. So it surely put that to rest, because sometimes I also thought the same way, that, you know, that you would not be able to really get it to work. Maybe you would cut it, you know, and get it maybe to handle maybe 100, 150 kilohertz either side at the utmost. Never expected to be able to cover, you know, in the 8-meter band, which is quite large. So this is basically, you know, a number of people have asked me about the receiver. You have to get off here, Dick, last week, when you said, actually, you can take the piece of coax cable that they, you know, used to make the shielded loop. You could suspend it from the ceiling very simply, just tack up there and all, tie it with a piece of cord, stick a broomstick, you know, to get, make it act as a spreader, and hang the tuning capacitor on the bottom of the feed line to the receiver, and be able to still turn it around and get some ideas, you know, of how it works, and, you know, if it's something that you could use without spending the amount of money that the commercially available loop is now, you know, number one on the market, a couple of them on the market, but the prices are fairly high. So you want to just see what it's like to use one. I guess, like you say, you can put one very easily together, just as I just outlined and I mentioned last week, Dick, over.
Call, please.
Person with the call, go ahead.
This is M2GIG. Earlier you asked if there were anybody who was trying to get in. I just wanted to make one comment. I'll let you finish up with your reply to the other gentleman, and then I will go with my comment.
Okay. When it comes to loop antennas, they're highly misunderstood, without a doubt. How can something that small, a loop antenna, which easily fits into your ham shack, have similar performance to something that's a dipole 135 feet long, or your square loop that is 370 feet circumference? And part of the magic is the fact that you're only receiving, and because on HF frequencies the noise of the band is as high as it is, it's only signal-to-noise ratio that counts, and the exact gain doesn't. Although what's really interesting, and I think you've got to write some more articles on this one, Mel, is the fact that you seem to be getting an absolute power into the receiver from your loop antenna that is strongly rivaling and quite often exceeding the power you're getting from the full 270-foot circumference loop antenna that's 30 or 40 feet in the air. That's mildly amazing. Opposite of common sense. I mean, the loop antenna, the full wavelength loop antenna in the air, if it was lit up at nighttime, so to speak, it's a massive piece of hardware. Whereas this loop antenna inside the house is, by comparison, a minuscule piece of hardware. And how can it have the same performance? When it comes to confirming it, running some QRP power, in other words, not full 1500 watts in the shack with you, it would be very interesting to first tune the loop by tilting it and rotating it until you get the strongest signal on reception. Then get on the telephone with your buddy in California while you transmit a small amount of power into that loop, key down. He sends the Morse code back to you on the telephone, and you tune the loop back and forth, up and down, in position and rotation until you hear the maximum signal coming back on the telephone. Because of reciprocity failure, because of Faraday rotation on the ionosphere, the way the signal propagates from Pennsylvania to Manhattan Beach, Brooklyn, is very different than the way it propagates from Manhattan Beach, Brooklyn, back to Pennsylvania. So therefore, you got to do the test on the telephone. But it would be very fascinating to find out how you realign the loop to maximize the signal back to him when you transmit. By the way, the person I was listening for earlier is Nassau Deputy Executive Helena Williams. Nassau Deputy County Executive Helena Williams said that she's on the threshold of condemning the properties where antennas have to be installed in order to take over by eminent domain and install those antennas for reasons of homeland security. So these communities, you could say they're on borrowed time to say, no, not in my backyard. The 21st century is going to come into their backyard, and it's time it does. N2GIG, please start off with your name, sir, and then your question or comment. KQRIW, my name is Dick.
Hey, Dick, it's good to hear you. I haven't spoke to you in a while. The handle here is Gig, Golf India Golf, and it's on N2GIG. And real quick, reference the cell sites and having the sites as an employee of Verizon Wireless. I'm one of the field guys. I've driven back and forth from Montauk and Greenport all the way up to Queens and haven't dropped once. If anybody wants to ride with me one day, you can try it. It works just well. Other than that, that was pretty much it. Seeing how they work on the equipment, I figured I had to jump in here and say hello. But other than that, that's pretty much it. Very informative tonight. I learned a lot, and that's pretty much it.
Zen 2 GIG. Dick, back to you.
M2EF6 with an answer to what?
Okay, I'll get to you in a second, Rich. Dick, I'm very glad you gave me that information. So at least with the Verizon brand name, one of the quality brand names, we'll say, and I don't have any financial connection with Verizon, and you can drive from Manhattan, from Montauk Point to Manhattan, or up to